We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Jack Manuel here for another Brooklyn Buzz and a crossover with the great lads from Locked On Nets. Adam, Doug, how are we?
Dude, we're killing it. It's the best season in Nets history as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that. Look, you guys do phenomenal work. I don't know how you do it day after day after day. Nick and I, people are like, man, you guys do so much. I'm like, have you guys listened to Locked On Nets? Every single freaking day, they find something to talk about with the Nets, and we're going to find plenty to talk about today.
Well, that's just in our, that's all contractually, man. Like, you know, we get stern talkings too, if we know we weren't to do it. No, man, it's good. Like, you know, this season has been a tough one for sure. As like, we know Nets fans know, you know, like you, Jack and Nick know, and Adam and I, you know, of course are well-versed in it. But when it comes to, you know, when it comes to talking about a team, it's like, hey, you're lucky to be able to talk about a team every day. There are some times where the team makes it a little harder in some situations than other situations. And this one, I would say, has been a little bit on like the left part of the difficult bell curve.
Yeah. Exactly. I wouldn't say it's been the easiest, but we've got plenty to talk about today, funnily enough. And I've digged through both of your timelines and just Nets Twitter in general to find a few topics here and there. And Adam, I'll throw this one straight at you because he's the talk of the town. I'm CT obsessed. We are all CT obsessed, maybe. But in general, why do you think Cam Thomas is such a polarizing figure to Nets fans, Nets social media, etc.?
Yeah, we got into this. I mean, Cam Thomas is as you say, the key talking point for the Brooklyn Nets, it feels like right now. And it's relative to a lot of things. How his career started with Brooklyn, right? You get him in the first round. It takes 2 years for this kid to finally see real minutes and a consistent role on the court. So there's the push and pull about the organization. Why hadn't you developed him? Why hadn't he been playing this whole time? Now he's playing really well. And the question is, how good is he? Can he be a core piece? Could he be the second best player, the third best player on the Brooklyn Nets team? So I think that a big part of it is that. And then the other part that Doug and I talked about the other day was, because who else are you going to talk about? Yeah. If you're going to argue about something with this team, Cam Thomas is the guy, because there isn't anybody else that comes near that level in terms of the outlook season over season going forward.
Yeah, I think that's their biggest problem is like the Nets are just so uninteresting that and sort of like untrustworthy when it comes to making decisions. And I think Thomas probably represents the nexus point of those two feelings, which is he's the only guy that like there might be everyone else's like minds are pretty made up on pretty much everybody at this point. Like I think we've all made up our minds on Mikal Bridges, Nick Claxton. We could probably discuss it a little bit, but. And then everyone else is kind of like, I don't know, are they even going to be on the team in 2 years? it's not clear. And then you get Cam, who most people would probably rightfully agree they probably mishandled coming up like in the development process. And he's kind of proven that stuff wrong over time. So then, you have to be distrustful about it going forward because he's proven your distrustfulness correct in previous stops, right? So it's like, but I think it mostly boils down to he's just the only one that remains maybe an unfinished product slash the team is pretty boring.
And just real quick, Jack, because Doug and I would admit too, like when they first got him, we talked about him after the draft and it was okay, microwave scorer off the bench. I get excited about any young player. Doug, I think, does a better job. Like, does a better job of being a little more analytical on looking at these guys. So then you have to also go through your own curve, your own roller coaster of, well, I wasn't sure, maybe a good microwave score. Or, well, now all of a sudden he's not getting looks. Did they make a huge mistake? Now he's playing well. Could he be really great? So I think that we've had to settle back into really strong player, great score, has shown a lot of development this year. The question still remains, what is the ceiling and what is the organization's intentions around him?
Let me throw the question right back at you, Adam, because you asked it. I'll let you guys answer it first, because it's a question I don't really know the answer to, and one that I do find myself to-ing and fro-ing between different sides in terms of his ceiling, how he's being handled, how he could be handled in the future. What is his ceiling? What is his role going forward? Doug mentioned, you guys mentioning second, third best player. Like, where is there? Is that an unanswerable question right now? Because we have the largest sample size of Cam Thomas playing time, and thankfully we actually do have that now. So we can assess off of a larger sample space. But in saying that, what is that role going forward? What is that ceiling going forward?
I think it depends on where he is, right? If he's playing for the Brooklyn Nets next season, he's their best scorer. He's the primary scorer. You need him critically to be on the court, you know, in order for this offense to have success. You've seen him develop in terms of on ball, court vision, right? Just awareness of the open shooters around him, how to get guys into some good positions. He's reacted well to the blitzing defenses. So you've seen that. You know, if you told me he's going to go on a championship contending team, I might say that he could be a little bit higher. Like, I might say, hey, could he be your third-ish, fourth best player on a contending team? I think so. I'm pretty sure Doug will push back on that, and it doesn't make it wrong. But that's what I think it's relative to. I also think that if he was going to get, say, traded this offseason and you put him on a low-ranking team right now, I mentioned this the other day, put him on the Spurs with Wembanyama and, you know, give a real electric score for that team that's young and developing, that could look different too. So I think it's all dependent on if he's in Brooklyn, if he's elsewhere, and ultimately, you know, again, what does the team want him to be for them going forward?
Doug, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that I'm probably lower on that. Well, okay, let me clarify something. If he was on a team with, like, you know, like Luca,
Kevin Durant,
like Kevin Durant, like, yeah, like this is where the shoot, this is where,
wouldn't that be something?
Yeah,
I'm
this imagine. Is where these kind of conversations get really tough, because it's like, it all is very dependent. If it's like, oh, it's Giannis, Jokic, and Cam Thomas, okay, yeah, they win the championship and he could be the third best player, right? So, but I do think that the things that work against him are just things that work against everybody in basketball, and it's just harder from a numbers game to be like really, really great when you are his size and not a point guard. I that's like not really a hot take. It's just, that just bears itself out. Like, look across the league and everyone's like, well, yes, there are examples. There are examples of guys who can be 6'3" with not super long wingspans and not great on defense that can be on really good teams. If you look across the league at the best teams, those teams don't really have those guys, right?
Jamal Murray's the one that Mitchell's really comes. Yeah, Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray are probably the ones that come to
Jamal
mind.
Murray's not, but Jamal Murray's like a high pick and roll point guard. Like, he's like, that's true. Not what Cam Thomas is. I think true. The Mitchell one is probably closer. Like, Bradley Beal, like, there's a lot of comps. We did an episode where we comped out Donovan Mitchell and Bradley Beal's first couple years in terms of just shooting efficiency. And just like, Beal was actually like a pretty good comparison, I thought. Not stylistically, but sort of just statistically. And there's just a ceiling on that. Now, if Beal, you know, wasn't a top banana and was a third guy earlier when he was actually not kind of broken down like he is now, then it'd be a different story. It's just hard. I just think that the ceiling is a little capped because of his size when you get to the highest levels. And that's not really a knock. It's just like, hey, go around the league and find the guys who are off ball scorers who are like, have huge roles on their on really, really good teams. It's just not that common a thing. But yeah. It's not impossible either.
And by the way, he does take 18 shots a game almost this season with Brooklyn, right? There's not going to be a lot of situations that he would go to and still get that volume as good as he's been, you know, from that standpoint too.
Yeah, it's like he's not Stephen Curry, but he's not Jordan Poole. Like, it's like this. That's the bell curve of where, like, he's somewhere in between And I
the question is, who do you think he's closer to? Do you think he's closer to Steph Curry or Jordan Poole?
I mean, no one's close to Steph Curry, so I'd probably say Jordan Poole. But then, like, everyone's going, you liked Cam Thomas, Jack. I thought you loved Cam Thomas. But it's just like, no, like, in these two sort of comparison points, like, he obviously is. Like, and he's closer to sort of the Jordan Poole that was, you know, a really successful player on their championship-winning team. Like, he was really good for them and maybe, like, their third best player. It was, like, Wiggins, Steph, and Jordan Poole. But I think, you know, we've seen that he has a higher ceiling than that. And, like, you know, the comparison points of Mitchell, Beal, and even some people bringing up Booker as well, their statistical profile over those sort of different years. And, look, I think it's enjoying this discussion rather than making it sort of, like, irrational and hate-filled. It's just like, no, he has to be Devin Booker. He's nowhere near Jordan Poole. It's just like, let's just all, like, enjoy the discussion. Like, we have this guy, despite, and as you guys have both alluded to and I've alluded to, he succeeded despite the circumstances that have been thrust upon him. You know, he should have gotten more time. He should be better right now because of the extended playing time that should have been, you know, gifted to him. But it is going to be polarizing, as we sort of discussed at the start.
Not to mention, there are segments of the fan base that would say you should build around Cam Thomas. He should be one of the centerpieces you build around. And then in the same breath of conversation, they will say, but if you're going to trade for Donovan Mitchell this summer, Cam Thomas isn't worth anything in that deal, right? So it's like you have to value him somewhere and be willing to be flexible on that, to your point.
Yeah, I think it's just like a lot of people, that there's no areas or shades of gray. It's just like, it's black, it's white.
Yeah.
Cam Thomas is the 1A, or he is a glorified Jordan Clarkson. And it's just like, no, like, on nights, he looks like genuinely the most improved player. Like, he looks like as good a Tyrese Maxey, like these sort of guys. And on other nights where his shot selection isn't as great, but I think those nights have become much less. I think his consistency is something that I'm really starting to get impressed by. And the whole Yes Network, you know, he's had one assist over the past 20 games, 21 games, like 22 games maybe now, but that was a bit of a funny stat. But yeah, I think having flexibility, as you guys have both alluded to, in terms of the assessment of prospects and a guy like Cam Thomas is hard for some people to sort of do. But, you know, at the end of the day, we both, all of us want this kid to be as good as possible. And I think even if he isn't in the Nets uniform, we're going to have a bit of a kinship to him because of how he's been developed within the Nets franchise, I guess.
Well, if he's not in Nets uniform going forward, he'll be the greatest player to ever escape Brooklyn, right? Like, we all know how the fan base will react to that, because he will still go somewhere and score points no matter where he ends up.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much. But let's get to, I guess, some superstar talk, because it wouldn't be a Nets podcast without some sort of discussion. And I remember seeing this tweet from Nets Daily, Doug, your best friend, the other day. Great podcast you did with him, by the way. Like, it was a really fun pod. But in saying that, he said the Nets' primary strategy, I can't remember when it was from, is to trade for big stars, like Phoenix did with KD and Beal, not signing big free agents, which will take longer. They think they can use the first they have as their own. They traded picks from Suns, Mavs, and Sixers to bring back stars. Now, I think people are sort of saying, are the Nets a superstar away? Are the Nets two supers? Like, and I've got some names I can throw at you in a little bit, but the Nets aren't a superstar away, are they, Doug? Like, they're like three superstars away.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. They're not, again, okay, let's talk about who the superstar is, right? If it's Giannis or Jokic or Luka, then they're closer. But if it's not one of those guys, and we dip down into the superstar, trough here, and it's like Donovan Mitchell or, you know, someone else like that, then no, I mean, clearly this is such a flawed team. They have master roster problems. They are not one, unless that player is like a super heliocentric, just alpha superstar, you know, who kind of anyone can fit around, then no, they're not one player away. And this is the biggest, it's almost like an existential crisis, I think, that the Nets are probably having here, because Kevin Durant, like, is that kind of superstar, can play with anybody, basically is a fit with no matter who you throw out there, and you're good to go. They got that once, and that was labeled a superstar move. Here, the superstar label is thrown all over the place. And if you're going into that next group of guys, like that 15 to 25 type player, like in terms of like overall ranking, then, I mean, I just don't even see what your ceiling is. Like, you're so far away. And then if you were to get one of those players, let's just make it Donovan Mitchell in this case, right? So like, you're able to get Donovan Mitchell in this case, and you are unload the precious few assets you still have. You somehow cobbled back together with the Durant and mostly the Durant trade. Like, I just don't know how you don't see that as throwing the baby out the bathwater. It's just, it feels like the returns are so diminishing. And so we've been pretty against this as a, I mean, Adam and I think I speak for Adam too, but we've been pretty against this as a stylistic build. Given the Nets' current situation and the landscape of the NBA, it feels incredibly realistic. If Sean Marks is out there tampering like crazy and he knows all these guys are coming, I'll definitely change my mind. Like, and I'm all for the tamper, by the way. Go ahead and tamper all you want. Nobody cares. It's not my money. So just go out. And if he's done that and he knows that these guys are going to shake loose for pennies on the dollar, obviously I would reverse course. But I just don't think that's the case. So if they're going to trade for one of these guys, I just don't see how that's anything short of a massive mistake.
Adam, what would make you change your mind?
It's hard, man, because I don't think you have the ability to go get the second player in this upcoming offseason, right? Another offseason from now, when the money of Ben Simmons comes off the books, you're going to have to make the decision about Claxton this offseason too, right? I think it feels a little bit different, and that's probably what makes it hard to change my mind. So if you tell me that Mikal Bridges still has value, and I think this is where Nets fans would say, well, why would you possibly even start to have that discussion? Well, I can paint a picture where Mikal Bridges offers value to Team X at a high enough mark that you can find a way to bring in two other players, two more established, you know, maybe a 1A and a 1B star, and then you reconstructure the roster around it. That's the immediate quick move now. All the assets kind of go out the door, and you're ready to roll. The other way is that in 2025, well, you can make a different decision at that point when you just have the money to go land the player. So why, for what you were celebrated for, getting so much capital back in the Kevin Durant trade specifically, why jettison it immediately when you're just 12 months away from being able to just go out and spend your own money and still have all those picks and still be able to draft something that, for everything that Sean Marks doesn't do well, he has at least shown in the rare occasions the ability to draft pretty darn well. So you could be in the background refilling up your young coffers, preparing for the next phase of this team and not kind of living where you are right now, right? You're out of the playoffs. There's nothing terribly attractive about this roster and the future looks really dim. So short of getting two players in the door, I don't think that I would change my tune. And I don't think that there's a clear path to do that because oftentimes, as we discuss, fans want to spend the assets twice, right? Like you can't spend you can't go trade for Donovan Mitchell and then still have enough picks to go get another high profile player as well.
Doug, do you think the lack of success, especially post All-Star break and all the crowd cheering for the opposing superstars, the Knicks fans outnumbering the Nets fans, has changed the tack or changed the mindset of Josiah and or Sean Marks at all? Like, do you think that this the decrepit nature and the poor state of the team currently has changed that retool into a rebuild sort of mindset at all, despite what we've heard, you know, in articles from credited reporters like Brian Lewis and all these sort of guys? Has that changed anything? I mean, it's changed our fan perspective, but has it changed the most important perspective, that of the owner, that of the GM?
Yeah, I see all the time people want to speculate that they can think like a billionaire thinks, and I always find that to be hilarious because they just definitely can't. And so I never try to put myself definitely not in the shoes of Josiah, because I don't have any idea what his feelings around the team. I mean, he doesn't seem to go to games anymore. He doesn't tweet about the team. That's the extent of like fans even interaction with him. And so pretending like you understand the guy who has more assets than, you know, most people would ever hope to accumulate over like multiple lifetimes. It's like, I just don't know why we try to guess at that. So with him, I just have legit no idea. With Marks, because he's an employee and not the owner, and there's a material difference, I would say it would be insane to think the job wasn't at least on some thin ice. I think most GMs would already have been fired, right? I don't think any other GM survives this run. There's like no historical precedent for this, for a GM lasting through like this kind of this many disasters. So that's the other part where I kind of have a hard time evaluating like their thing, because we are in completely uncharted waters. My guess is this latest run has not shifted much except if Marks feels like he's on thin ice, he's probably incentivized to make the moves that would raise the floor some in the short term without caring too much about the future. Because, like, why would you set your predecessor up for success by doing another thing? You know what I mean? So I think that's a realistic take, because I think that's just like organizational 101. But like, thinking of, I know what Cy thinks, like, I just don't, anyone that says that, I always laugh at, because they just legit have no, they're telling on themselves. They have no idea.
Adam, what do you think? Has anything since, you know, the awful, decrepit state of this team and how they performed changed anything? And I think I really like Doug's point about, you know, when he was discussing around Sean Marks and his job security. We saw him post trade deadline. He was nervous answering some of those questions from the Nets reporters, and he seemed to be taking maybe more accountability and be a bit more eager to sort of, you know, get things rolling. Now, is that best for the franchise? No, but as Doug alluded to, it's probably best for his own job security. You know, a 2-year window where the Nets win 40 to 45 games is better than, you know, 3 years of 20 to 25 and then a big sort of splash where you get some better development. But do you agree with Doug? Do you think anything's changed at all? Do you read into the articles from Brian Lewis, who is basically the mouthpiece for Josiah when it comes to some of his thoughts and how he communicates with the fan base? Where do you stand?
Yeah, I think what probably did shift, even though they didn't necessarily make the moves out front to do it, and that's why this offseason, I think Doug and I would say, is concerning, because you sold the idea that we're going to trade away Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, all these guys, we need all these assets back, but we're going to get Mikal Bridges and Cameron Johnson, and they're going to be the bridge. So we're going to make the playoffs. We're probably going to lose in the first round, but maybe over the first couple of seasons, we get a little more competitive. We, you know, lose to a team 4-2 in a first round series. Who knows? Maybe you then in 2025 go land the free agent and it starts to catapult it. The problem is that the return immediately has not been good with these players, right? Mikal Bridges, we know what he is now, and it's not that next level of player coming over from Phoenix. It's not the 26, 27-point score in the final 27 games a year ago. He's more what he is now, and his volume of three-pointers has increased. He is your 3-and-D wing and probably needs to be your third best player at best on your roster. Cam Johnson, we thought the contract wasn't bad when he first signed it, and there's a lot of incentives there that'll probably never hit. It's declining money, and it's still a bad contract, right? So he's another problem. So this is one of the examples where I think if anything changed for Sean Marks specifically, it's that I may have overvalued and over-evaluated Mikal Bridges and Cameron Johnson coming here. And now for my own job security, I may feel like I need to go out this offseason and fast track getting a star as opposed to having the patience, right? Being able to wait a year or two and then spend your own money and retain the assets you got in those trades.
Yeah, it's almost like, would you rather Sean Marks have like an extended time in Brooklyn, have some job security, and it means we get the rebuild that Nets fans and so many people around the world so sorely want? Or would you rather Sean Marks get fired in 1 or 2 years and we get Donovan Mitchell and et cetera, et cetera? It's just like door A or door B. You know, it's just we know what many rational, whether it's podcasters, content creators, fans in general, people on the street, know the trajectory this team should be taking. But as both of you guys have alluded to, there are differing priorities from ownership and the key sort of deal makers, Sean Marks, everyone else going forward. But talking about
Can I just ask you a quick question, Jack?
Like, sure, mate.
Do you think that, I think this is so easy to say now, but do you think if Marks did say, hey, we're going to strip this down, it just didn't work out, it would feel to me like an intellectually honest answer? Do you think like the fan base would accept that? Or would they say, oh, no, you don't get another chance at that? You know what I mean? Because does it feel like he should get another chance at doing that, even if we think that he's the right, like that's the right way to go? Like, do you think that would be received well? Does that make sense what I'm asking?
Like, yeah, absolutely. It's the perception of should he continue to be the decision maker in such a rebuild? Look, no, but I also wouldn't care, because I think it's the right decision. And we've seen, and Adam alluded to it earlier, many Nets fans will say this as one of the maybe only, if you know, one of his couple of strengths is Sean Marks knows how to draft. He knows how to rebuild. We've seen that. Like, we saw that five, six, 7 years ago, and he built us into a way where we were able to allure, you know, those two big superstars that we're talking about. So it's just like, let Sean Marks do that again, because he's actually kind of good at that. Should he get that opportunity in the first place? It's just like failing upwards, you know, being rewarded for failing, getting like another 3-4 year, you know, extension on your GM sort of deal. It's just like, no, that doesn't make sense. But if the decisions that are for the betterment of this franchise, you know, if it's Sean Marks doing that, I wouldn't be the happiest guy in the world. But they're the right decisions, and that's what I care more about. And I think most fans, you know, they might get caught up in the irrationality, the subjectivity. It's like, this isn't right. We should be doing this for, why is Jeff Peterson silly, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know. Do you guys feel the same way, where it's just, as long as the right decisions are being made, I don't care who's making them. Let's like at least do tick the boxes. If it's Sean Marks ticking those boxes, then so be it. But I want it to be the right way that we rebuild this thing.
Yeah, and I'll answer.
Adam, I think Jock answered it. But like, you get what I'm asking too, right? It's like, would you trust? Is him saying it and admitting it enough to give you trust in him doing it going forward? Like, do you think that would be met with? Like, do you think that would be met with a good answer? I don't know. I'm now doing a bad job of asking the question.
There's a segment of the fan base, and this just happens with every fan base, every sport, right? Segment of the fan base, once you, again, we talked about this now a couple of times, right? And one of Doug's favorite phrases that we champion on the podcast now is like intellectual dishonesty, right? It's intellectually dishonest to have made your proclamation about Cam Thomas and then say that there's no changing my mind about it. We change our mind on a lot of things when we talk about the Nets organization, because there's good and bad and things in the middle. So if you told me that Sean Marks came out and said, hey, and I've used this example, the Rangers in hockey did this a few years ago. They came out and said, hey, like we tried, it didn't work out. We're stripping this thing down. It's going to look ugly, but we know what the goal is. The goal is to build this thing back up and be a contender again. If you had Sean Marks come out and say this, and in conjunction with the move that everyone has discussed ad nauseum, Houston, you want to give me Jalen Green and a few of our picks back in control, and then you walk right out in front of the podium and say, listen, we understand when we made the trade with Kevin Durant, we got back Mikhail, we thought it could look one way. But unfortunately, over the last season and a half now, we realize that that's not going to be a viable path, and or there would have been a season at that point, the trade deadline. And this gives us the best opportunity to get ourselves back to being a young, competitive, and long-term viable team, right? That would sell me on it. It would at least get me into this offseason, into this next draft class. I think the thin line there with Sean Marks is, if the draft class didn't work out after that move, if the next trade didn't pan out, then we all would sit here and say, did we drink the Kool-Aid one time too many, right? Finally, we got the glass of poison there instead of moving on. And even if it was all the fundamentally same decisions, it would just land different because somebody else was making them.
Yeah, I think in general, Sean Marks shouldn't be, like this offseason, I wouldn't be surprised or like, if at all, Sean Marks isn't the GM making the next decision to whatever the next path is for the Nets, whether it's the big trade for a top 25 player sort of superstar B or rebuilding, like we're sort of alluding to, that we agree is the best path. But yeah, I honestly don't want Sean Marks to be making those decisions, because I think he's made too many incorrect decisions for where the Nets currently do sit. And I think, you know, it's not all Sean Marks, but he is the guy that, you know, gets paid to draft, gets paid to bring in guys, gets paid to give guys contract extensions. So he deserves a large brunt of the blame. But if the right decision is made, as Adam alluded to, like, I don't care who makes it. Like, it's the decision itself that matters more than the figurehead who makes it, to me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what fans fall under the spell of, right? Is you attach all these things. There's a million different layers to the superstar era that just happened with Brooklyn. And we could go through a chapter and verse. At the end of the day, it all gets spread around a little bit. But right now, who's left? Sean Marks. Like, he's the only piece left to that puzzle that has crumbled down around him, and he has been the guy pulling the string. So it's just one of those funny things, right? You don't get to be as frustrated with Sean Marks if he hadn't accomplished what he was able to do to set himself up to be in a spot to be so heavily scrutinized, and something arguably that maybe he didn't even anticipate, really. Like, I think that's the one other thing I'll say quickly, that he came in, had to come out of the Billy King era, had to turn this thing around, had to take on bad assets and restructure it. The world where, like, all of a sudden, it's very rare that multiple stars become available on the market and you're a team in a position to financially go do it. So in some ways, it ramped up or completely pivoted what the agenda was for this organization, in theory, in a very positive way, then it doesn't work out. And that's where I think he has survived so long, because if you're Joe Tsai, you can sell yourself the idea. We were walking down path A. All of a sudden, this incredible opportunity came up. We diverted route. It didn't work out. And now we're just going to come right back to neutral and continue what journey we started 3+ years ago.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But we've been creeping around.
Nets turns. If you put on your Nets tinfoil hat, you can convince yourself of a lot of things making sense around them.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, as always, Buzz listeners. I've decided to put this into two parts because there was so much content that Doug, Adam, and myself discussed on this bumper episode. So part two will be dropping very, very soon as well. But I wanted to split this one up because it made a bit more sense, because there is a lot to come on the next episode as well. As always, give the Brooklyn Buzz a 5-star rating on any podcast platform you listen to. And as always, Nets World, let's keep going.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.